This is Bulls Beat on Bulls Unlimited. Bulls Beat is your stop for exclusive interviews, highlights, and the very latest on all sports at the University of South Florida. With today's show, here's your host, Derek Sharp.
And on this Wednesday show, we'll recap a win for baseball in Daytona Beach against Bethune-Cookman. Got really dramatic at the end. We'll also tell you what's to come tomorrow. That's right, with Easter weekend, everything from baseball and softball is moved up a day. And we will be on the air for a very important series with softball, which we told you their opponent coming to town is going to be like their first three in conference play difficult. Well, perhaps the most difficult yet. And so a critical series there, and one that yours truly will be on the microphone for all three games of on Bulls Unlimited. We'll also tell you what's going on with men's and women's tennis. It was really fun on Tuesday speaking to Alvin Todorica of the men's tennis team, a conversation you can hear tomorrow morning on Bullseye starting at 7 o'clock. Excellent stuff from the head baseball coach, Billy Mullins. This was our first baseball-themed show. We also spoke with Ben Rosenblum, and you do not want to miss that either. He is always outstanding. And funny enough, we were talking about the stolen bases on the team and how they've already got way more than they did last year. And at the time, Jim Lauck was complimenting him for leading the team with 12 stolen bases. Well, guess what? He had three more last night as the Bulls set a season high with seven steals in their win in Daytona. Again, we'll recap that here shortly. We'll also give you some great news when it comes to track and field. Mentioned tennis, the women's team continues to shoot up the rankings, and we'll also recap men's golf. Said they were playing at a very difficult event for the second weekend in a row, and well, they saw some really good teams, and they, if they're going to do well this year in the postseason, are getting a good taste of what it's going to be like, that is for certain. As we said on the streamed version of the show Wednesday morning, it repeats every half hour from 7 to 10, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Both Amir Abdur-Rahim and Jose Fernandez's jobs are, well, being noticed. And certainly there was some noticing by the University of Miami, as it was reported with their longtime coach Katie Meyer retiring, that they were in talks with Jose Fernandez. Well, on Wednesday afternoon, very dramatically, Jose Fernandez posted that he is staying as the head women's basketball coach at, quote, this tremendous academic institution with our outstanding leadership. We are in a position to accomplish even greater successes in the years to come. Go Bulls. So year number 25, and hopefully more, indeed, in store for Jose Fernandez. We also talked about how Amir Abdur-Rahim, very honestly, with Jay Retcher on 95.3 WDAE on Tuesday, gave an interview and was asked about his future with the Bulls. Of course, when you have great success, and I mean great success, you're going to get noticed probably by some bigger power conference, quote-unquote, schools. And he was very honest, said he's going to speak to his wife and doesn't want to rush out of here. Said he actually talked to Michael Kelly this week. So obviously, if we hear anything there, we will let you know. But Jose Fernandez is officially not going anywhere. We'll let you know that a couple of just outstanding individuals on both the men's and the women's teams, Sam Hines and Ariel Wilson, were both named All-Academic District Performers by the College Sports Communicators, the CSC. Second year in a row for Ariel, who is set to graduate with a degree in business administration. To be on this team in your region of the country, basically, you have to have completed at least 90% of your team's games and also had at least a GPA cumulative of 3.5. So Ariel Wilson is no longer going to be the point guard as she is graduating, of course. And with that in mind, whether it's related or not, check out my X page if you want to, at Derek Sharp, D-A-R-E-K-S-H-A-R-P. On Wednesday morning early, I put out a link to an excellent resource for tracking, especially with, you know, about 1,000 people in the transfer portal, the comings and goings from all the colleges on the women's basketball side, and maybe where a certain point guard who was top 10 in the country in assists last year and was her school's scholar athlete of the year may have landed. That's all I can say for now. Just an NIT update. The team that, of course, defeated the Bulls on Sunday night, VCU, is playing at Utah tonight. Indiana State with former Bull Ryan Conwell, and of course the team that so many people wanted to make the NCAA tournament, and I did a whole post on Saturday, if you missed it, on our podcast page. You can still go and check it out on how I would fix the NCAA tournament with an expansion, but either way, Indiana State won a thrilling game against Cincinnati last night, pulling it out at the very end. So Indiana State will get the VCU-Utah winner in the NIT Final Four. And how about Georgia, which has gone on the road to beat a couple of fellow Power Conference opponents? Last night, a close one, a thriller at Ohio State. So Georgia makes a semifinal and will get the winner between tonight's UNLV at Seton Hall game. Games going on in baseball and softball, and it was a nail-biter for the baseball team. Didn't look like it was going to be on Tuesday night. By the way, we did not do the broadcast. We were busy taping Bullseye, but also turns out would not have been doing a good radio broadcast because Jackie Robinson Stadium is venerable, and now it's venerable and under construction, and there is no place in the normal press box for broadcasters right now. So I would have had a spot down the first baseline on the party deck, which is really cool. But first of all, there would have been a lot of noise going on around me. Second of all, I really could not have actually seen that thing called home plate. The rest of the field would have been great, but that would not have been optimal. So we definitely were keeping an eye on what happened, and it looked like it was going to be an easy midweek victory. It was instead a dramatic midweek victory, but one nonetheless that put the Bulls to 15-10 on the season. Now, mind you, this Bethune-Cookman team recently had won six games in a row and did take two of three from Florida A&M in a dramatic series last weekend where the last two games both went 11 innings. They did lose the second game, but prior to that, they had beaten UNF, they had topped Jacksonville, they had swept another conference opponent, Mississippi Valley State. And the Bulls were looking really, really good thanks to Dominic Madonna and an early two-run homer by Marcus Brodell. Been great to see him in that left field spot sort of get his groove back. His two-run homer made it 3-0 in the second inning. Joaquin Moncay had gotten things going with the single. He had a solid game. And then Eric Snow with the sac fly. It was the Brodell homer that made it 3-0. In support of Dominic Madonna, his first great start for the Bulls, went five innings, struck out six, only allowed one run. That was after the Bulls had taken a 4-0 lead thanks to a leadoff double. And of course, Ben Rosenblum bunts for a single, steals a base, and then a Jackson Mayo ground out makes it 4-0 to the Bulls. Could not tack on in that inning, and then Bethune got Madonna for the only run he allowed in the bottom half. And then the sixth inning, in comes Tanner Mankin. Let me tell you, the errors were an issue, four of them in this game. Now, they did start off with two straight singles and a sac bunt against Tanner Mankin, and then a sac fly RBI, so it's 5-2, and you've got one out to get, and you're fine. But a fielding error by Moncay at third base, and then eventually a two-run single and a tying single off Lawson Gailey, who relieved Tanner Mankin. And Bethune had completed the rally. It was five apiece. But Gailey gives them two very strong innings, including two strikeouts in each of the seventh and the eighth. And then the Bulls take the lead on a leadoff homer by Jackson Mayo in the top of the ninth. Actually put two on, but couldn't add on. You're always wanting more insurance, right? It was 6-5 at the time. And then another nearly really costly error after Chandler Dorsey got the first two out in the ninth. A fielding error by Eric Snow on a would-be easy 1-2-3 save perhaps opens the floodgates as the pinch runner comes in, steals second, so tying run on second. Full count walk. Another full count walk. And yet another full count with the bases loaded, but Chandler Dorsey gets the strikeout to end it. The Bulls go to 15-10. Bethune drops to 12-11 for the Bulls. Two hits each for Brutcher and Rosenblum along with Moncay, and Brodell with three RBI in the contest. Little on the challenges that face baseball and softball this weekend. You look at Charlotte, 11-14, 1-2 in the conference. First of all, in the conference, it was no different than the men's series against Memphis, but for one close game went against, well, two close games went against Charlotte. They lost a doubleheader Saturday, giving up a go-ahead homer in the bottom of the eighth in the first game, 4-3. And then losing in 10 innings Saturday. And guess what? Sunday, they run-ruled the Owls 13-1 in 8 innings. They played an extremely difficult schedule. That is going to be a test. Remember, last year, Charlotte not only made the NCAA tournament, but eliminated Clemson in Clemson before actually losing to Tennessee in that situation. It was their second trip in 3 years. They went to Greenville, North Carolina, and went 1-2. back in 21. Before that, it had been 10 years since they made the tournament. They are solid but not spectacular, both pitching and hitting. They don't have that one standout starting pitcher, but really good bullpen. So you want to try and jump on them early. Don't get to A.J. Wilson. Well, they're probably going to get to him since he leads them in appearances. 14 appearances, 26 innings, 51-11 is his strikeout-to-walk ratio. And batting, only one of their regulars hitting above 290. However, got a handful of guys all in that 260-280 range. Thad Ector, far and away, is their leading hitter at 347. He's got four homers, but three of them came in one game. He's a transfer from College of Central Florida. No one with 20 RBI, but seven players between 14 and 19. Their leader in both RBI and home runs is Juan Correa with 6 and 19. He is from Weston. We mentioned Montez was the conference player of the week, hit 400, two homers, 8 RBI, of course, a grand slam, career high 5 RBI Saturday, and he scored 6 runs. The pitcher of the week, no, Jack Siebert didn't get honored, but if you look at it, there were a lot of pitchers who had better numbers, just didn't so happen to get a base hit. And by the way, again, Bullseye airs every hour between 7 and 10 Thursday. You hear Billy Mull take us through that whole drama. You hear what Ben Rosenblum had to say about it, which was funny, but he also gives so much insight on the team. And you'll also hear Kaylee Cottrell, who co-hosts with myself and Jim Lauck on the baseball program, speak with Bryce Archie and how they're going to fly him in just to pitch on Saturday in and around football practice. So the pitcher of the week was Ruger Riojas from UTSA, you know, since he pitched twice flawlessly with two saves in their beating East Carolina twice. Also on the honor roll, which, again, does anybody hear this from the conference? There are 9 players on a baseball diamond. How about, you know, 7 players on the honor roll, but instead only room for 5, and 3 of them were pitchers who had tremendous games. So hard to argue Jack Siebert not being included. And the guy who led UTSA to that win against East Carolina offensively, Mason Lytle, was one of the two offensive players named. Incidentally, UTSA followed up that 2-of-3 against East Carolina. Again, no sweeps. You have a 5-way tie for first at 2-1. They went to Waco. Now, Baylor's not as strong in baseball, but they still grabbed a win last night. And East Carolina, for that matter, shook things off and took down NC Wilmington. Tulane got beat by a very good Southern Miss in Hattiesburg, 9-4. Boy, the Sun Belt Conference in baseball is so good. You got Coastal and James Madison, both top 30 in the computers. And then 7 more teams in the top 80, with Southern Miss right behind Georgia Southern leading that pack. By comparison, in the American, got to tell you, East Carolina 27, Wichita 60, then it's the Bulls at 85, Tulane and Charlotte just barely within the top 100. If you're wondering, Charlotte did not play a midweek game. This weekend, only 2 of the 2-1 teams play each other. That's Tulane hosting UTSA. And even though we'll be on the microphone for softball, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on not just how the baseball team's doing, and we'll let you know basically every inning how it's going, but how the other games are going, while keeping an eye naturally on the conference softball proceedings as we get to that team. And it has been a tough start. Ken Erickson's team still has the good overall numbers from a metrics perspective, but they're going to have to start to pull off some series victories. They have not gotten one yet. Good news is there's plenty more chances. In fact, 6 of them, including against some really good teams. The Bulls have not played any of the top 3 teams in the league. FAU and North Texas are 8-1. Wichita is 7-2. And they're all on the Bulls' schedule, with North Texas coming to town this weekend. The Mean Green, who 2 years ago made their first ever NCAA tournament, and really looked headed there again last year in the screwy Conference USA format, they actually, as the 3 seed, defeated the 2 and the 1 seed to get to the final, while one of the teams they beat along the way had to go through the elimination bracket, Middle Tennessee State, the number 6 seed. And even though that team had lost a game, including to North Texas, it was a 1-game take-all. North Texas was undefeated in the conference tournament and lost in extra innings. So they've kind of carried that over to this year. It's like they're upset about it still. And they just swept Tulsa, a team that took 2-of-3 from the Bulls, and followed that up by blanking number 8 Oklahoma State. Yeah, North Texas beat that Tulsa team in 3 games. Get the scores: 1-0 in 8 innings, 1-0 and 3-2. So these are going to be some nail biters Thursday and Friday at 6. Saturday afternoon at 1. And right now, on the softball side, the American is stronger than it is on the baseball side, with 8 teams of the 10 in the top 100, then a bit of a drop-off to UTSA and Memphis. 3 of those in the top 50 are Wichita, Charlotte, and FAU, then Tulsa 52, USF 53, and coming to town, North Texas 65. By the way, the Mean Green followed up their sweep of Tulsa with a 7-4 win against Texas Arlington. And obviously on the broadcast Thursday night, we'll give you much more on the Mean Green. FAU 28-7, by the way. Again, 8-1 in conference, tied with North Texas, Wichita 7-2. Then it's Charlotte in fourth at 6-3. Tulsa and UAB 5-4. Both those teams, Tulsa, UAB, and Charlotte, are the three that the Bulls have lost to, essentially your fourth and your tied for fifth teams. Then the Bulls are in seventh place at 3-6. But 23-13 overall. East Carolina, which loaded up non-conference with a 21-2 record. Yeah, they're 2-7 in conference. Then UTSA and Memphis, just one win between them in league play. And that's what's interesting about the Bulls' schedule. They haven't played any of the top three, but they also haven't played any of the bottom three. If you look ahead, you can never assume sweeps, but even if you go 8-1 against the bottom three, and win two of the three series against the solid squads at the top, then you're looking at an NCAA tournament resume. Oh, by the way, Charlotte, picked to finish second behind Wichita, went to Raleigh on Tuesday and beat NC State. Oh yeah, Wichita goes to Charlotte this weekend. That'll be one we'll keep an eye on during our softball broadcasts. Men's track and field, after one outdoor meet, is ranked 5th in the country. Now, I don't know how the USTFCCCA polls and rankings system works, but I'm fully on board with them. As Goodness Aradia, that's a man that Eric Jenkins told us about from the beginning of the season, was going to have some national type numbers, and he indeed leads the nation, longest triple jump at 15.91 meters. The 4x1 relay team is third in the country based on its time from the last meet. The 4x4 is also 5th in the country, and 4th in the country in the 400 meters is Trayshawn Bowie, while 5th in the pole vault is Kobe Babb. And you add all that up, and you've got a pretty strong team. Women's tennis, definitely a strong team, moves up to 52nd in the rankings. And again, right on the bubble is mid-40s, and they have two more opportunities to rise up with their matches next weekend. But after they defeated Charlotte on the road, that was another big jump of 5 spots for Christina Morris's team, which is 11-8. Had a chance to talk to Alvin Todorica, and it was great on Tuesday. You can hear that tomorrow on Bullseye. Now, the men are 9-11, so even though their computer ranking is solid in the top 70, they are probably, just by the math involved, going to have to win the conference tournament unless they really pour it on at the end of the regular season. They have 5 matches left, and they have 3 opponents that will be ranked ahead of them, and 2 of them are this weekend, both at home. 55th ranked Liberty Friday afternoon. Incidentally, that'll be streamed on ESPN+. And then Sunday against 41st ranked VCU. I guess that continues the USF-VCU Sunday tradition on campus. Davide Tortora, who was a big member of the team last year, the transfer, has been out most of this season, but did return in their last weekend, and look for him to be in the singles lineup, and that would really strengthen this team for the stretch run, which will include the home finale against FAU team, a team that's ranked slightly ahead of the Bulls. The American is stacked, so winning the conference tournament is going to be very difficult, but also provides you, even if you don't win it, with more sort of RPI-type situations. And the women are in good shape. Even if they lose in the conference tournament, even making the semifinals might be enough for them this year. Said men's golf was playing in a very difficult field with, you know, just 7 teams in the top 20. Steve Bradley's men ended up in 13th place out of 16 teams. They did have their best round, even par, yesterday in Palm City, but that dropped them down the leaderboard while others were shooting better numbers. Only 4 teams actually ended up under par, separating from the field slightly, were FSU, 19 under. Vandy, 4 shots back in second, went 12 under in the final round. Then Arizona State and Arkansas, all of those teams in the top 11 in the country. So again, the Bulls are seeing the best teams and seeing what they have to do to get to that level. They finished in the end 20 shots behind that fourth place group. But they did have some pretty good moments. First of all, Sam Nicholson was in the top 10 himself individually, shot 3 under for the 3 rounds, very consistent all the way through. That put him tied for 8th. And definitely got to mention Shubi Jaglan. Now, overall, he just finished outside the top 75, did not have a great week, but definitely had a memorable last 9 holes. Try an eagle, which would be good enough for most of us. But before that, on the 12th hole, a hole in one for his best round by far of 1 under par. The men wrap up their regular season next weekend in Augusta, Georgia at Forest Hills. And then remember, both the men and the women host the conference tournaments in mid-April. That'll wrap up Bulls Beat here on the podcast page.